The case began at about 11 p.m. on January 24, 2012, when a man named Bob Bashara called 911 from his Middlesex Road address, reporting that his wife, 56-year-old Jane Bashara, was missing.
Frank Park, police and fire.
My name is Bob Bashara. My wife is not around, and she's not answering her cell phone, and her car and her purse and her are gone. And I'm just a little concerned.
He told police that he had expected her to be home around 8 p.m. He said he thought she was running an errand. Jane's family said that she had left for work around 5:30 a.m. and arrived home in Grosse Pointe Park at around 6 p.m. Bob returned home just 2 hours after Jane, at approximately 8 p.m. When he doesn't hear back by the afternoon of the following day, he calls the police again.
Yeah, hi, this is Bob Bashara calling back.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I still not heard from her. She's not shown up. I mean, this is way out of the norm for her, so I'm very concerned.
Jane was found dead later that day, January 25th, 2012, in the back of her Mercedes-Benz SUV, which was spotted parked in an alleyway near Pinewood Avenue and Anott Street in Detroit's East Side, an area which is run down and considered to be one of the roughest locations in Detroit due to a higher crime rate and a large amount of unkempt homes. A tow truck driver found her inside the SUV, which he was called to come and tow away. An autopsy took place the following day, and on January 26th, the autopsy revealed Jane Bashara's cause of death, which was strangulation. The coroner also noted that they believed that there was no weapon involved, and that Jane was missing a fingernail. This information was not immediately released to the family. The next day, Bob was asked to attend an interview at the Grosse Pointe Park police station, and at around 9 p.m., he did just that.
Can you tell me? Was that the cause of death? Strangulation?
Well, I met with Dr. Diaz today. There was some trauma to her, obviously, that caused her death. But he is meticulously going through it again tomorrow.
Okay. People are asking me. My kids want to know, how did Mom die? I had nothing to say to them.
Well, I understand. I
talked about doing work on taxes and then reconfirmed that I had nothing Tuesday evening and nor did she. Because it was cold, I was working mostly outside. I would go in the Hard Luck Lounge. I think I went in there about 5:15, had a drink. And then I came back out, went back to work. I said, come on, I'm up at the Hard Luck working. He said, I can be there in 10, 15 minutes. I said, great. And we had a couple drinks.
Okay, you arrived around what time, sir?
About 7, 10.
Okay.
And then we'd stay until 8 o'clock, and we parted company, and I came home.
I'm sure there's something out there that she's done. Probably a lot of things that, you know, you may not know about, and vice versa, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just things about being an adult.
We know pretty much what we're doing, I mean, about each other. I mean, there's not a lot of secrets and a lot of things we hide.
After trying to appear as transparent and concerned as possible, Bob then provides information that he believes that his wife's habits may have been what led her to East Detroit, where her body was discovered.
I'm not going to narc on my poor wife, but she did smoke marijuana.
Okay.
She, you know, took a couple puffs before she went to bed, helped her sleep. I saw no trouble in it. I didn't really know where she was getting it from, but I wasn't going to question it, and I let her do her thing. You know?
Okay, so that's another angle, which is an important angle, because
maybe she went to buy something. And
exactly. Where could she go? Now we're looking at maybe watering dope houses where they sell weed, you know. I appreciate you coming in and doing that for us today.
You know, I'm happy to cooperate as much as I can.
Bob Bashara then left the police station after agreeing to take a polygraph test. As he was taking the test, officers armed with a search warrant searched the Bashara household. They remove any computers in the home and take several pictures of each room. Interestingly, police are quick to publicly name Bob Bashara as a person of interest in his wife's death the next day on January 28th. They provide further information on January 29th, explaining that officers have found Bob Bashara's polygraph results to be inconsistent with the statements and timeline that he provided.
At this time, there's no indication this was a random act. Police don't believe it was a carjacking or robbery. But after failing a polygraph test, Bob Bashara is now at the center of the investigation. Grosse Pointe Park Police Chief Dave Hiller is not calling him a suspect, but says he's the only person of interest. In an earlier interview, Jane's husband offered these thoughts.
It's just unthinkable that this happened to her and what she had to suffer. I am just so upset about it.
Friends offering support repeatedly told Action News off camera Bob would never hurt his wife and there were no outward signs of trouble in the marriage.
On January 31st, at about 11:15 a.m., an individual with knowledge of the murder walked into Grosse Pointe Park Police Station and asked to speak with investigators. This man's name is Joe Gentz.
He says, well, I got something going on, and he says, I need to take care of it. He says, I want my wife dead.
Did you believe him?
I didn't believe him at first.
Okay.
I turned it down. And he got mad. Look at me again. I said, friend. Person. I was a dead.
Joe Gentz was pointing the finger at Bob, claiming that Bob was forcing Joe to help him get rid of his wife by a specific date. Joe also made claims that Bob threatened to have him murdered if he did not cooperate. The investigators then expressed their disbelief in Joe's story, which resulted in some explosive reactions.
I ain't been waiting on crap!
Joe then decided to bite the bullet and confess to Jane's murder.
Okay, I'll say that again. Okay.
So what time do you think you got to his house Tuesday night?
7 o'clock,
okay.
Then what happened?
Then Bob turns around and says, take care of it. I looked at him, and I'm like this. That's when he pulled out the gun.
No matter which way you look at it, I'm a dead man too.
What? Okay. Did she see the gun? Where did you hit her?
Back of the nut.
Okay.
And put her down on the ground.
Okay, go on.
Anyways, grabbed her. Like this. Bob says, take her out. She out. He kept yelling at me.
Did he stop moving?
Her neck's broke.
Okay.
Why do you think the neck is broken? Did you hear something crack?
I heard it crack.
Okay. Sit down.
You want some water?
How much was he supposed to pay you?
Eight
what?
$1,000.
$8,000?
Plus a kid. He says, the deadline, whatever the deadline is. I gotta get this done, and it's big. Whatever it is, it was big. Everything happened on that driver's side of the vehicle. There was nothing on the passenger side whatsoever.
Where'd you leave the keys?
On the floor.
Did Jane have any personal effects of her? Wallet, ID, purse, anything like that?
Yep.
Okay, where was that at?
Bob threw it in there.
Threw it in where?
In the vehicle.
Where at in the vehicle?
On the floor.
Front back?
Front. So Bob asked, 1, 2, 3, 4 people to do a hit. Besides myself. Like I said, I know I'm a dead man walking. Because I don't know who he knows. I know he has the neighbor next door, which is a mafia connection. And he has somebody else. I don't know who else he has. Bob told me to be there regardless of what happens. Otherwise, I'm a dead man. Like I said, he already had somebody looking out. Make sure I did what I had to do. I was already told.
Can I give you a little bit of, do you think he's this all-powerful mafia guy? Let me ask you this straight up.
I have no idea.
Do you think he would contract you out to do this hit if he was that powerful?
I don't know.
Absolutely not.
I have no idea.
So you need to calm down and realize that...
I have no idea.
You're a little paranoid about the whole thing, and that's absolutely understandable.
I know is I was told.
By whom?
By Bob.
That someone's going to be following.
Yes.
The same guy that you are fearful of.
Insane.
Start thinking about this, though. Listen, Joe. Listen to what you're telling me.
What do you want me to do?
I know that, but you need to calm down and realize that a lot of this stuff is not what it is. Okay? He's not this all-powerful guy who's got... If he did, he wouldn't be calling you and forcing you to do it. He'd have maid guys or whatever. I don't know how that
works. He already said he was going to have a whole bunch of other people if I couldn't do it.
Even now, why would he force you to do it?
That's a good question, Ellie.
Yeah, no kidding. So I wouldn't worry about it. You're not that powerful. He's a random coward who doesn't want to go through the divorce proceedings.
Whatever.
To get rid of his own wife. So he
I don't know. I don't know if that was the case. I have no idea.
Well, I'm telling you that's the case.
I have no idea.
I'm just letting you know, Joe. We need to cut the man.
I don't know.
This is not about.
I have no idea if he was going through a divorce or not. I don't know that.
Okay. But that's irrelevant.
I don't know if what the motive was. I still don't know what his motive was.
So she got you there?
She got me in my bed, I can.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
There's the DNA.
Joe was then placed under police custody, while investigators continued to work to verify all of the information that he just provided. At around 9 a.m. the following day, local 4 cameras catch Bob Bashara outside of his home. Bob refuses to comment on the latest allegations against him made by Joe. Joe was actually released from custody shortly after his confession. However, about a month later, while attending a custody hearing for his daughter, Joe Gentz is officially charged with the first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit the murder of Jane Bashara. Joe is then held at the Wayne County Jail. To those keeping up with the case, it was beginning to appear that Bob Bashara may have actually been innocent of the claims made by Joe. That is, until the man that introduced Bob to Joe, named Steve Tabato, contacts the police regarding a strange conversation that he had with Bob. Officers are dumbfounded by the claims made by Steve, so they decide to place a wire on Steve and ask him to set up another meeting with Bob.
Yes. Okay. Yes, either acted alone or had someone else help him, but not me. All of them want something they want. There's no reason to. She was making 125 a year.
Bob was asking Steve for assistance, locating a hitman to murder Joe while he was in jail.
How much you talk? Cash. And checks.
Yep.
You cannot find. Huh? Oh, get the fuck out of here, man. What's
this? Hey,
where I got a wire?
At this point in the conversation, Bob was wondering if Steve was wearing a wire. So, in Steve's words, he bent over and mooned him. This was apparently enough for Bob to continue with the conversation.
Yeah, because I can get somebody to go in there. He'll go in there.
Yeah.
He'll go get locked up in there. I mean, he'll put glass in the sugar or salt, and he'll eat glass. He'll tear up his whole inside, he'll drop dead in 2 days.
Yeah. Whatever. Okay.
Just get your money together.
Joseph.
Yes or no? Thank you.
Yes or no? 80%, 90%?
Yes.
Okay. Here's two.
Minutes after this conversation took place, on June 26th, 2012, Bob Bashara is arrested and accused of trying to solicit the murder of Joe Gentz while Gentz was still in prison. Bob stayed silent for several days after his arrest, until he is confronted with the audio from the wire. He then confesses to the attempted solicitation of the murder of Joe. Bob also apologizes and pleads for forgiveness. On December 10th, 2012, the judge overseeing Bob's case sentences Bob Bashara to a minimum of 6.5 years in prison, or a maximum of 20 years. Joe Gentz was also sentenced to 17 to 28 years in prison for the murder of Jane Bashara. Throughout his entire legal battle, Joe maintained that Bob promised to pay him for the killing of his wife, and that Bob had Joe at gunpoint when the murder took place. 5 months later, on May 1st, 2013, Bob Bashara is finally arraigned on the charges, including conspiracy to commit murder, solicitation to commit murder, perjury, witness intimidation, and obstruction of justice in his wife's death. He pleads not guilty.
KCI5, Bob Bashara is now charged with first-degree murder in the death of his wife. Right now, 7 Action News reporter Anu Prakash is outside the Bashara home in Grosse Pointe Park with the very latest. He's live tonight. Anu?
Well, Jeff, local realtors are telling us that a sale is pending on the Bashara home here behind me, and it all comes at a time when Bob Bashara says he needs money. Dressed in his prison blues, Bob Bishara walked into a Detroit courtroom to face a judge once again.
State your name for the record.
Robert Bishara, Sr.
Today, a not guilty plea was entered on his behalf. He did not have an attorney by his side. The magistrate set his next court date for Tuesday.
Well, may I ask for some more time? At this point, I'm trying to raise funds for an attorney.
It's likely the money he's trying to raise would come from the sale of the Grosse Pointe home he and Jane bought in 1989.
Sir, did you understand the charges? Maximum penalty, sir.
I do.
Bishara has also been charged with conspiracy, solicitation to commit murder, witness intimidation, and obstruction. He's already serving a 6 to 20-year prison sentence for trying to hire a hitman to kill Joe Gentz, his former handyman. Gentz says he strangled Jane Bishara because Bob threatened to kill him if he didn't. Now, if convicted of these latest charges, Bishara could spend the rest of his life behind bars.
About a year later, on October 7th, 2014, the murder trial against Bob Bishara began. And this is where things get weird. During the trial, a copious amount of evidence was presented that Bob was being unfaithful to Jane, having an affair with another woman named Rachel. And as it turns out, Bob and Rachel had been looking into homes together, and even planned on purchasing one 3 days after the death of Jane. This led investigators to believe that the deadline Joe was referring to during his interview was likely regarding this date. Bob also had communication with another woman that he was cheating on Jane with. Her name was Janet Lehman. Apparently, Bob was in talks with Janet and Rachel about having a three-way polyamorous relationship.
Well, yes, he told me he was looking for a third, and I told him that I didn't want to be a third wheel, and that I was looking for a one-on-one, and then he contacted me back and said no, it wouldn't be like that.
Not only was Bob being accused of cheating, investigators also found a basement under a property that Bob owned. Inside this basement was a bed, leather clothing, masks, whips, hooks, and something described as a 360 spiderweb-like device. Visitors would almost always be wearing tight leather clothing that was considered to be provocative. There was also one specific witness that spoke to investigators that had actually been inside the basement. She said the basement was known as the dungeon.
And so, understanding the draw and the excitement, I had to see the dungeon.
Apparently, the dungeon was a place for Bob to practice BDSM, otherwise known as dominant and submissive intercourse. This witness explained that she herself was interested in this type of thing, and it is most common for people of the same interest to find others through web ads or through word of mouth. They then meet blindly in locations such as the dungeon. She also said that Bob was referred to anybody that had visited this location as Master Bob. Not only was Master Bob living multiple lives, there was also some evidence regarding the claims made by Joe. A technician from Bob's cell phone company testified that Bob had made 472 calls to Joe within the month leading up to Jane's death. And on the morning of her murder, he had attempted to call Joe over 20 times. The prosecution then had Joe arranged to testify against Bob during his trial. However, once Joe was seated in the courtroom, he told the court that he decided that he did not want to do so.
Is your desire at this time not to testify for either party?
No, ma'am.
Bob's attorneys went on to refute the accusations made against Bob by stating that Bob had no reason to have his wife murdered, even if he were cheating or living a double life. They tried to substantiate this by stating that Bob had actually been married in the past and was able to swiftly deal with the divorce. So for what reason would he not just divorce Jane as well? They also tried to argue that the calls made to Joe were simply regarding some handiwork, as that's why the two were connected in the first place. Despite Bob admitting to participating in several acts that took place in the so-called dungeon, Bob would claim that Jane was completely aware of this part of his life. Bob's attorneys would then go on to claim that the inclusion of these statements and accusations regarding the BDSM dungeon should not have been allowed into the trial, as it is completely irrelevant to the case and may continue to damage Bob's character. The jury began their deliberations on December 11, 2014, after 2 full months of testimony. And just 1 week later, on December 18, 2014, Bob Bishara was found guilty on all counts.
In the case of the people of the state of Michigan versus Robert Bishara, would you please read your verdict form as marked as to count one, conspiracy to commit homicide, murder, first degree, premeditated.
Guilty of conspiracy to commit homicide, murder, first degree, premeditated.
Case to count two, solicitation of a homicide, murder.
Guilty of solicitation of a homicide, murder.
as to count three, homicide, murder first degree, premeditated.
Guilty of homicide, murder first degree, premeditated.
As to count four, obstruction of justice.
Guilty of obstruction of justice.
Bob was sentenced to life in prison in January of 2015. He appealed his convictions, making claims that his rights were violated by an ineffective defense. He also went on to claim that he was denied a fair trial. Joe went on to write a letter to the judge, stating that Bob was actually completely innocent in the murder of his wife, and that Joe wanted to make things right. So, he was then given the chance to change his story by testifying in court.
What, this?
Yes.
This is garbage.
Unfortunately for Bob, when Joe hit the stand, his story reverted back to his initial statement of events. He even included some more details, claiming that after Jane was murdered, Bob walked over to her and said, "I'm sorry, baby, I didn't mean it." The judge then had a few final words for Bob.
"You planned, groomed, and masterminded this pitiful plot to murder your wife and dump her body in Detroit like garbage, with a staged crime scene in one of the poorest areas of Detroit, hoping locals who would steal the car and contaminate the crime scene. You would finally be able to be free to live your new life in this seedy, manipulative lifestyle you dreamed of, financed exclusively by Jane's money. But what you did not realize is the person you called an idiot would reveal your manipulative plan to rid yourself of your Jane. He cleverly signed an affidavit, which your attorney took the bait, accepted it, and believed that it would set you free. But you never dreamed that this idiot that you claimed would be the one to outmaneuver Master Bob. There is no newly discovered evidence here that would exonerate your client. Moreover, the court is going to find that there has not been a miscarriage of justice. All of your motions are denied."
On August 18th of 2020, Bob Bashara passed away at 62 years old while behind bars. Jane Bashara's sister, Julie Rowe, released the following statement. "I am disappointed that he only spent 8 years in prison. That is just not long enough for all that he ruined." Joe Gentz stated that he was very sorry for what had happened and asked for forgiveness. He maintained that Bob Bashara promised to pay him for the killing of his wife. Wayne County Judge Vonda Evans told Joe that despite his limited mental ability, he knew right from wrong and good from bad. Joe Gentz will be eligible for parole in 2030. He will be 66 years old.
Is that something you feel guilty about, that you were the guy that put the two of them together?
Yep. That's why I waited so long to do this interview. I just wanted it to go away.